Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to a digital-only conversation of Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanisan. In this episode, I speak to Wong Wai Kan of Stashway Malaysia about the pros and cons of ETFs. Kan, in our conversation about investing strategies, you mentioned that the S&P 500 has done about 7-8% per annum since the financial crisis. Now, that is a really good number for any type of investment on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the, let's just say, pros and cons of getting into ETFs?
Yeah, I think ETFs have a very clear value proposition. First and foremost, is that the management fees is the biggest draw. It's very, very low cost, like you mentioned. It's actually meant to replicate an index like the S&P 500, MSCI, Asia X Japan. So the expenses, expense ratios are very, very low. It's only meant to track an index or a basket of securities. So with passive funds, we see three clear advantages. Its ability to get diversified very quickly and get in for a very cost-efficient level. Each index can consist of hundreds of stocks, if not thousands in a portfolio of ETFs. So you're actually trying to focus on market returns and not trying to actually beat the market. And also it's very, very liquid, meaning you can buy and sell anytime. It's a very, very quick way to get exposure to different asset classes or geographies just by combining different ETFs. So instead of buying hundreds or even thousands of stocks and bonds, you can get diversified very, very quickly with a handful of ETFs. And also, just another point, every portfolio should never be static because, you know, we go through economic cycles. And ETFs are a very good way of changing the asset allocation of your portfolio. For example, if you go into bad times, you can actually sell some cyclical ETFs that have exposure to, say, Asia ex Japan, technology stocks, and consumer discretionary, and swap that out for more bonds, more gold, more real estate. So it's a very, very quick way to achieve those things.
And I presume that's the strategy that fund managers or even Stashaway employs.
Yeah, so as a sophisticated fund manager, we actually employ this strategy to make sure that we protect your wealth in bad times and enhance your value in good times. And I would say cons for passive investing in that is that in the short and medium term, your returns will match the market. So you have to calibrate your expectations. It's not about outperforming the market. It's about not being drawn down during the bad times. It's about just matching the market by definition, right? So up or down, matching the market.
And Ken, what is tracking error?
Yeah, so that's a really fine but equally important point. Just coming back to the original intent of buying an ETF, which is to replicate an index, it has a lot of advantages. The advantages is that you get diversification really easily, it's really cost efficient, and you get a good liquidity. However, tracking error is a very important point because you have different ETFs tracking the same index and not all ETFs are created equal. So tracking error really comes in when the ETF doesn't replicate that index or that basket of securities well enough. And that can work against your intention of investing because you cannot precisely calibrate your entire portfolio when, for example, it's meant to track the S&P equally, but let's say there's a tracking error of 3%, meaning it could outperform or underperform the S&P 500. So that there you have some variance, which makes it hard to predict things. And also, it might end up costing you performance because your goal is to actually match the market. But what if you're down by 2 or 3%? So before you even invest in any ETF, just look out for tracking error. You want to minimize the tracking error as much as possible so that the ETF mirrors the S&P. That's actually one of our qualifying criteria. When we build portfolios, we look at tracking errors, which are the lowest in the market.
So Ken, not all ETFs are created equal. So who's responsible for the different ETFs?
Yeah, so the ETFs are actually issued by fund managers, just that they issue ETFs or passive vehicles. So the big three are BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. They account for over 80% of market share.
Wow.
So in the world, there are almost... There actually is over 5,000 ETFs, and in the US, there's over 1,000 ETFs. Together, they all command about $5 trillion in terms of market cap. That's still a far way to go because the total wealth market is more than $20 trillion. Mm-hmm. But you can see post-financial crisis, a lot more money is going into ETFs and passive platforms. And these three big guys, BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, actually issue these ETFs. So The investor, however, can be assured that these ETFs actually hold real assets. You actually have to look at the backing of these ETFs. BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard have to make sure that these ETFs perform the way they should.
So in a worst-case scenario, any of the big three disappear, like we see, well, like we saw in 2008, what happens there? Do my assets then disappear, or are they still somewhere?
No, so ETFs are essentially like a fund, right? So when the fund is meant to replicate, say, the S&P 500, they actually hold over 500 stocks in their basket. So in essence, the investor doesn't take counterparty risk, because if the issuer of the ETF goes under, the fund actually still holds the stocks or the securities. So everything will be in a trust account.
Yeah, so that can't be touched by, say, creditors or anything like that?
No.
That's it for this BFM digital-only episode of Ringgit & Sense. I'm Roshan Kanesan for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.